This is The Drive with Josh Graham Podcast. Tune into The Drive weekday afternoons, 3 to 7 on Sports Hub Triad.
There was a big upset in the ACC last night. More on that in a few minutes. But let me start with this. What you don't say is often more illuminating than what you do. Panthers owner David Tepper is notoriously loud, and he doesn't shy away from many topics. But he was non-committal earlier in the week when asked about Cam Newton's status with the team. That tells me he wants to move off of Cam. But it would hurt his business to say so publicly. It's hard for him to hide things. I think that's a big part of the reason he moved off of Ron Rivera in early December, before the end of the season. He didn't want to act behind Rivera's back, he said. He thought that was less noble, less honorable. In this instance, they need to get something back for Cam. So we can't just cut ties like he did with Rivera. Also, he was asked if he was fielding phone calls, inquiries from teams. Said that, I don't know, my wife answers the phone. Which is a witty way of him avoiding tampering. He can't say he's fielding calls, or else that would be a violation of NFL rules. They can't trade Cam, and they can't have trade talks, technically, until next month. You need teams to believe that you're going to keep them. So I fully understand Tepper's play here. But if he wanted to keep him, if he truly wanted Cam back, he would have said it. Which goes back to what I started with. Sometimes what you don't say is more illuminating than what you do. If you're in a marriage and your wife comes up to you and says, are you cheating on me? Come on. You being silly? That's ridiculous. Why are you asking that question? That's not committal. I remember when Mitchell Trubisky was coming out of North Carolina. Larry Fedora, he was on the draft circuit, going on all these shows. And of course, the question you're going to get, if a team drafts Trubisky, what type of quarterback are they getting? And I remember the line he kept saying was, oh, Trubisky's a quarterback who's going to play a long time. Notice he didn't say, oh, this is a perennial Pro Bowler. This is a guy who's going to lead a team to a Super Bowl. Yada, yada, yada. This is a guy who's going to play a long time. You can't go out there and bash your player. It's your player. But I thought it was more interesting what he wasn't saying versus what exactly he was. If you missed Tepper earlier in the week, here's what he said when he was asked directly about the quotes Cam Newton gave CBS Radio on Radio Row. This was just a few weeks ago. He said he absolutely expects to be a Panther based on his conversations he's had with Marty Herney, with new head coach Matt Rhule, and Tepper. This was Tepper's response.
Listen, I'm not a doctor. You know, I said it a million times. Is he healthy? And how does he? I mean, he's not a doctor. So, you know, there's a lot of different things can happen. But first is he healthy? Tell me that, and then we can talk.
We all agree on that. If Cam's healthy, yeah. Then we can talk about what type of player he is. But Tepper could have added, Cam Newton's our guy. When he is healthy, we expect to have him back. When he gets healthy, we expect him to be our guy. Tepper did not say that. Tepper's a very smart businessman. He doesn't shy away from things. What he didn't say there tells us everything. Also, it's not hard to read between the lines for what's best for Carolina. The best thing for the Panthers is to move off of Cam. I get the other side. Oh, it's low risk. It's only 1 year. $19 million. Make it $21 million. It's not that much of a hit for a starting quarterback. He's only 30. He has many years left in the league. The moment Luke Kuechly decided to retire, this became a full rebuild. a full rebuild Greg Olsen didn't want to be a part of. So they mutually part ways. Carolina needed to save some cap money. Remember, Kuechly, even though he retires, $11 million is going against the cap because of Kuechly this year. Dead money. Carolina could do nothing about that. Cam, he can give Carolina $19 million of cap relief. His contract, $21 million. The cap hit would be $19 million this season. They can relieve themselves of that. Once Kuechly retired, this became a full rebuilding project. Don Terry Poe, they have to decide by March 15th if they want to pick up his option. If they decide to release him by then, they save themselves $13 million. Why is money very important right now during a rebuild? Christian McCaffrey is likely going to be looking for a contract this offseason. You're going to have to pay that. James Bradbury, one of the best corners in football statistically last year, according to Pro Football Focus. His contract's up. I doubt you really, during a rebuild, want to franchise tag somebody like that. Taylor Moten, likely going to be looking for a new contract. You got to take care of tackle. You have to take care of your biggest star, who's one of the best players in the league. You got to take care of somebody who's been producing in the last few years, like Bradbury, rather than worrying about someone who hasn't been on the field the last year and a half, essentially, in Newton. So I get he might be the most talented player to play in Panthers history, and there are still so many people that love him, but it's the right thing to move on. I think David Tepper told us all we need to know about where he's at with it. He wants to move off of Cam, too. On Twitter, at SportsHubTriad, if you want to chime in, what do you think the Carolina Panthers should do with Cam? 336-777-1600 is the phone number, if you want to chime in. I mentioned there was a big upset in college basketball. I told you to watch out for Georgia Tech yesterday. They upset Louisville. The Cardinals, I believe them to be the best team in the ACC still, regardless of that loss. They need to figure out one thing between now and March Madness. They need to figure out what they're doing in their backcourt. They need more from Jordan Mora, their star, but they need to figure out what's going on in the backcourt. Because late in the game, David Johnson, he was terrific. One of the best freshman talents this year in college basketball. But he's kind of an enigma. I can get that right. Kind of an enigma. Nailed it, Robert. Robert Walsh, the producer of this show. Saw your Dylan producing today. David Johnson, he's the key to the team's success. Late in the game, he constantly got to the rim to keep Louisville in it. Yet, he's not starting for this team. Fresh Kimball's getting a ton of minutes, and he's not producing, he's not scoring. He's the one in a two-point game, despite Johnson getting to the rack every time he pleased. He's the one with the ball who's slipping and turning it over on Louisville's last possession. It doesn't go to Wara. It doesn't go to Johnson. It's Fresh Kimball? I still don't understand it. I don't understand Perry being there either. They need to get that right. They need to understand their roles in the backcourt. The frontcourt, it's fine. Sutton, Enoch, Malik Williams, great players. The backcourt needs to follow suit with Ryan McMahon, one of the better six men this year. He understands his role perfectly, and he's good at it. Just ask NC State fans. Run off screens, shoot a bunch of threes, don't try to do too much. Don't play out of your role. View it like a TV show, right? Have guys or actors and actresses, they understand their characters and the role that they're supposed to play. If somebody falls out of their character, Robert and I, we were just talking about this before the show, Seinfeld. Like, could you imagine if Jerry tried to be Kramer or Elaine tried to do Costanza, tried to play that role? It just wouldn't work. You gotta stay in line. And if somebody, two or three players, are uncertain of what their roles are, how do you expect them to play them? And also, how do you expect things to work? That's what happened with Louisville last night. And with Jordan Mora, he's become small in many big moments this year. 6 points at Duke. They won the game, but he wasn't the reason why. 8 points in a loss to Kentucky. He was great versus Florida State, but a lot of the points he scored was in garbage time, a home loss to the Seminoles. Last night, he only scored 2 points. Didn't get a ton of shots, but he wasn't really assertive. He wasn't an alpha on the floor. He wasn't very tough, which isn't something we said a lot throughout the season with this Louisville team. Also, this isn't all conjecture from me sitting here. Chris Mack was asked about Jordan Mora's effort as well, Jordan Mora's game. And this is what the Cardinals head coach had to say.
I mean, they put a, 5'11", 6 foot tough kid on him. And we run post-up plays. Jordan can't figure out how to be tough enough to hold a guy off and lay the ball in.
That doesn't sound like a coach is standing up for Wara. He expected more out of him. He expected more leadership, more toughness. He expected Mora from Jordan Wara. Probably a fair way to put it. We'll talk to Wes Durham about this game a little bit later on in the hour. One of the faces of the ACC network. Might have some NFL thoughts too, considering he's also the voice of the Atlanta Falcons. He'll be in here in about 30 minutes. However, we got into the CP3 Academy in Winston-Salem this morning with the effort and aspirations to recreate Trey Jones's miracle play in Chapel Hill last Saturday. We'll tell you how that went next on The Drive.
The less you expect of Josh Graham.
What is wrong with you?
The less you'll be disappointed. You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
I stand behind saying Trey Jones' miracle play in Chapel Hill at the end of regulation last Saturday is the most difficult basketball feat I've ever seen. I'm not saying the most meaningful. I'm not putting it next to Ray Allen in terms of importance, hitting that three in the corner in 2013. Michael Jordan clearing Russell and Elo in the playoffs in the 1990s. I'm not saying it's nearly that iconic, but the sheer feat of hitting the front of the iron after stepping 2 feet to the right on the foul line in order to know what direction it's going in, retrieving that ball in that spot, and then hitting a jumper to tie the game in Chapel Hill as a Blue Devil, it is one of the more incredible things I've been lucky enough to watch in sports. And I was in the Smith Center last week. So we had a bet, a wager, earlier in the week that we've actually followed through on here. Aaron Gabriel, who's an assistant producer on this show, he said that give him 15 minutes, he could recreate that play. 15 minutes, he could get it done. I thought that was ridiculous. I said, if you do that, I will be willing to commit some sort of shame. And the shame I committed to is something that I hate more than anything else, and that is Christmas decorations being put on a car. Specifically my car. I hate it when it happens in December. I've committed to doing that the last 2 weeks of February if Aaron could complete that in 15 minutes. If Aaron could not do that, he would have to write a song with his band and play it on the show, the topic of which is me. Have to create a song about me. Well, the results are in. We were at the Chris Paul Academy in Winston-Salem this morning. It was finished at around 9:15 this morning. Do we have some buildup with this? Aaron Gabriel got it done. Aaron Gabriel completed the play. We'll put a video of it on my Twitter page at Josh Graham Radio. You can also see it at Sports Hub Triad. It took him 10 minutes and 15 seconds. Aaron was being defended, with the air quotes, loosely, by Sawyer on the play. He got it done after 10 minutes and 15 seconds. I caught up with him on the floor right after he completed the play, and here's what he said.
I'm standing here with Aaron Gabriel, who just after 10 minutes and 15 seconds hit the shot.
You know it, baby.
To recreate the Trey Jones shot. What was your motivation in getting this done?
Well, you know, I just want to come out here, give 110%. You know, we've been working really hard on the shot, trying to get the timing down, trying to get our spots down. But, you know, hard work pays off, and we're here, baby. We're here. Let's go.
What was the most difficult part?
The most difficult part was by far hitting off the rim and getting to go where I needed it to go. But a little perseverance, no problem, Josh. Got it done. What kind of decorations you want on your car, my man? Well, what you want, antlers and a little Rudolph nose going there?
You're sweating pretty hard right now. Was this harder than you thought it would be?
Well, you know, here's the thing, Josh. It's 9 o'clock in the morning. I'm kind of out of shape. I'm old, you know what I mean? I'm a slim fella, but don't let that fool you. I spent a lot of couch time invested here.
You heard it here first. That's Aaron Gabriel.
Aaron's not in studio today. I really don't know why, but he's now joining us via telephone. Aaron, how satisfied were you to accomplish this feat?
I was real satisfied. I was happy with myself because I talked myself into that situation, and, you know, you want to show and prove after you talk yourself into something like that.
Were you worried at any point?
No, I wouldn't say worried because I had plenty of time. Just a matter of taking my time with it and getting the look I needed to knock it down.
How would you characterize the defense that Sawyer was playing?
Oh, man, Sawyer was playing just the tightest defense. The tightest defense I could have ever imagined. I thought it was, you know, I just was like, man, how many people are out here on this court? Thought it must have been at least three people. And I remembered it was just Sawyer. But just smothering defense, smothering.
Congratulations, Aaron. We'll talk tomorrow. Get him out of here. Sawyer, I'm just so ticked at you.
Like, at me?
Yeah, I'm looking at the video, and it's on social media now if you want to watch this. Like, you just tried to dress this thing up. I'm watching it. Like, you could have maybe stretched your hand out and maybe grabbed the ball before it landed beyond the three-point line. Aaron embellished it a little bit, too, to grab it and make sure it was behind the three-point line. And then the effort you made here, like, you just... You barely even put a hand up. You put the hand up after the shot was up to make it look good. Just garbage.
Look, I mean, we know if I want to strap somebody up, they're not going to score. So it had to be, like, a little realistic where maybe, you know, like, I was trying to act like he had a chance to get it off. And I think I maybe just fell asleep on the throw to the rim. I don't know why I didn't reach out my hand there, because usually I would.
I put out a poll last night, and you could chime in on this. At 336 or at Sports Hub Triad or 336-777-1600. If you had to recreate the Trey Jones shot at the end of regulation in order to escape a gym, do you die in that room? 71% of people said yes, that they die in that room. It took Aaron 10 minutes and 15 seconds to get it done. And quite frankly, I'm not even mad. I'm impressed. The same way Ron Burgundy wasn't mad at Baxter for eating, what, like an entire wheel of mac and cheese, if I remember correctly?
Just cheese, no mac.
Oh, no mac. Just a wheel of cheese. I'm not mad at Aaron. A little bit proud he got it done. He made a shot earlier in the 10 minutes, but he took about 5 seconds to get it off, and also it was very embellished. Sawyer not getting a hand on the ball and letting it go beyond the three-point line.
I feel like you are mad because you keep coming back to Sawyer's defense. Like, if you weren't mad, you wouldn't be mad at Sawyer for playing bad defense. Also, listen how defeated you sound at the end of this interview.
Yeah.
You heard it here first. That's Aaron Gabriel.
Defeat. If that was ever a voice.
I hate having Christmas lights on a car. I've never had them on my car. Mostly because I don't like putting things down. Like, I was talking to my girlfriend last night, and... You know,
you were going to put her down? You're going to put Sarah down?
No, I wasn't going to do that. We took the Christmas tree down. Like, it takes forever to do these things because it's something that I find cumbersome. I don't really have much interest in that. And also, everybody shares the road. So, like, don't make me look at your car with Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer on the front
and some elf legs on the back and some antlers on the top. Like, get out of here with that. Now this is going to be on my car. And not only is it going to be on my car, it's going to be in February. So Jenny and other people in the office around here, they're looking up things to put on my car now. It is uncomfortable. Wes Durham going to be here in 20 minutes. Yes, Robert.
Is that uncomfortable that Wes Durham's going to be here in 20 minutes? No, my whole thing is, I mean, look at it this way. You negotiated yourself down to 2 weeks, which was smart because at first I was trying to bargain my way into a whole month.
Wasn't going
to
let that happen.
And even if you thought Aaron was never going to make it, you would not push it to a month. So I will commend you for bargaining yourself down to 2 weeks, and I thoroughly look forward to decorating your car on, what are we saying, Monday? Is that what we're doing this?
I hope this is done as quickly as possible.
Monday. Looking forward to it.
I got to give Sawyer some props, too. Like, I undersell Sawyer at points. Big North Carolina fan who, you know, friends with some of the Hoopers, but he also, is a Hooper himself. Sawyer, like, when he started to stroke it, like, he played one-on-one with Aaron. Like, he was dropping NBA length threes with regularity. Like, he hit, I think, 5 threes before dropping his first two, which was a driving layup to beat Aaron in a game to 11.
So if you were going to use a word to describe Sawyer's game, just like a little extra credit for BDOT's grammar school, what would you call Sawyer?
Oof. LaMelo Ball-esque.
I'll accept that.
He's a bucket.
There you go. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
He's a walking bucket.
I walked out. You guys were still just hanging out because they opened the floor up for us at the CP3 Academy in Winston-Salem. How much longer did you guys play? Like, I went to go work. What were you guys doing?
We probably stayed for, like, an extra, like, 15 minutes and just got some shots up, and Aaron was feeding me. I was trying to go for, like, the Trae Young-type shots, and they were draining. I hit, like, 5 straight, and then...
Don't believe that.
Aaron can vouch for me, but, no, we got some shots up. I tried to throw him a couple more alley-oops. I don't think we got a successful one, and then we both headed our separate ways.
It's not the substance of what David Tepper said about Cam Newton that makes this a massive story this week. I'll tell you three things that are responsible for this thing blowing up next on The Drive.
Providing you with a kind of sports programming that makes some people laugh. But most people just wince.
Ooh.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
Despite that speed bump in Atlanta last night, I still think Louisville is the best team in the ACC. Wes Durham is now in with us from the ACC Network and Packer and Durham. Here's my case for the Cards, Wes. I like a team I can trust from three-point range, and I see a team that has 4 shooters over 30% from 3 on the year. Enoch doesn't take a ton, but he's over 30%. Ryan McMahon coming off the bench. I love what Sutton's done all throughout the year. Jordan Wara, even though he wasn't good last night with only 2 points, 43% from 3. That's my concern with Duke, so I trust the 3-point shooting from Louisville a little bit more than I trust Duke's. And the Cards, they are more experienced and they are tougher than Florida State is. I think FSU, they missed a lot of foul shots in Cameron. That was a game that was right on a silver platter for them to win. Louisville went into Cameron and won that game a few weeks ago. So right now, again, it's trying to split hairs when you look at the very top of the conference. Louisville, Florida State, and Duke. But I like Louisville out of the three. When you are evaluating the Cards at this moment, when you're trying to evaluate what you like headed into March, what traits do you value most?
One, experience. I think the experience of going to the tournament really counts. Louisville was there for 40 minutes last year and lost to Minnesota in the first round. The team who I really like at the end on this whole deal, if you ask me, it's a week-to-week thing. It's funny you're asking this because Packer and I were talking about this morning. And this week I like Duke. And you're asking me, why do I like Duke? Because Duke took the shot Saturday night of the rivalry game, found a way to win, geographically or whatever they found, or geometrically they found a way to win.
It was wild.
Yeah, it was wild. But then they held on, and then 48 hours later beat arguably the toughest team they're going to play all year from a matchup standpoint. I mean, Louisville's tough, and Louisville won the game at Cameron, but this is a different kind of game. The game Florida State has more bodies than Louisville. You know that. I mean, we all do, mm-hmm. right? And they forced Florida State into a tough night. And I think there's something to be said about what Duke did in the 48 hours. And what I will say about Louisville, and I don't disagree with it, I think Louisville's immensely talented, regardless of last night. But now, see, here's the thing, Josh, I'll say about Chris Mack. He's in a spot now where he has to take last night and make it work for his team Saturday at Clemson.
And last year, Wes, you reference where they only played 40 minutes in the NCAA tournament. Right. Everything changed because of lack of toughness. They blew that lead against Duke. And I remember asking Chris Mack when they finally beat the Blue Devils a few mm-hmm. weeks ago, what did you feel the difference was this time around when the lead got away and you still found a way to win? He right. said, toughness. That was it, and they didn't have it a year ago, and we saw how things kind of spiraled out of control for them after that loss in the Yum Center. This year, they had tough losses against Florida State and Kentucky, but then what did they do? Started winning a ton of road games, last night being the exception, of course.
Yeah, I think what they have to do is they have to understand, well, in particular, Jordan Warr has to understand he's got to play every night. And I think Chris Mack, you know, kind of hit the nail on the head after the game last night when he talked about they put a 5'11 or 6 foot guy on him and he couldn't get the ball.
I love
right?
that. Love that. Love the
honesty. Well, I did too, because and I think he's telling Warren, hey, look, now you got to go be the leader of this team. The other thing I like about Louisville is I like the combination of Enoch and Williams and what they're able to do. And I love David Johnson. He's going to be fantastic in this league. But they don't have the experience of March. They're going to have to win a game. No matter what happens in Greensboro, Josh, they're going to have to win a game in the tournament, in the NCAA tournament. Duke, even though they're like a brand-new team, has the best leader in the league in Trey Jones, right? I mean, when he leads like he did Saturday in Chapel Hill and Monday night in Durham and, you know, occasions like that, Duke's going to be hard to beat. And, look, I think they're contenders. I think Florida State is a load. I think Trent Forrest – was dictating that game Monday night a little bit.
You're hitting on the biggest thing, Wes, and I'm going to go a step deeper here. You mentioned Trent Forrest. You mentioned yep. Trey Jones. We talked about this sitting in a hotel lobby in Charlotte in October. I liked Louisville before the season. Your concern was the backcourt, how everything was going to fit together, because while everyone's focusing on Wara, because he's the ACC Player of the Year frontrunner in some minds, in the backcourt, you didn't really get much from Perry, and you didn't really get much from Fresh Kimball, particularly on that last shot. David Johnson was great, and you mentioned that, but it does seem like they need to figure out some of the roles. Ryan McMahon, he knows his role, and he plays it well. The mm-hmm. rest of the guys in that backcourt, I still need more from David Johnson consistently, and they need to sort things out there.
Well, and these problems are exclusive to the three teams at the top, because the other teams – all have issues that they're going to have to deal with that are going to be controlled in the games they play. See, Louisville lost last night, but Louisville didn't hurt themselves because VCU lost to George Mason and, what, Seton Hall lost to or something like that. I mean, you know, the reality of it is that Louisville, yeah, bad loss, but teachable moment for Chris Mack. NC State has a loss like that, and NC State's season might be in danger. You know, like the other night, somebody said, did NC State keep their tournament hopes? No, but they're still in the conversation. They're not in the tournament, but they're obviously not out of the tournament, right? Same for Notre Dame losing at Virginia. Are they out of the tournament? No, but they're not in the tournament either. And Louisville and Duke and Florida State aren't going to have these conversations because, in my opinion, one of the three is going to win the tournament in Greensboro. And it'll be a – and you know this, it'll be a big league upset if these three aren't in the semifinals Friday night either in the Coliseum.
Wes Durham's with us here. You can watch him on Packer and Durham in the morning on the ACC Network. Follow him on Twitter at Wes Durham. Speaking of the ACC tournament, we're going to be broadcasting there for a day for the women's tournament in a couple of weeks.
Sounds like us.
Yeah, then we're going to be there all week long. all week long the following week and the
Gee,
NCAA?
Sounds like us.
Yeah. Are you going to be there for the NCAA tournament the following week?
No.
All right.
No, well, we're going to – actually, weeks. You know what? Packer and Durham's going to do a spring break trip the first week of the NCAA tournament.
Well,
we're
going
to go to Bristol. We're having spring break in Bristol.
Oh, not Myrtle Beach?
No. No, I've been to the Ocean Gale. I don't need to go back to Myrtle Beach. I'm in good shape. If I go to Myrtle Beach, it's going to be 36 a day for 6 days, Josh.
The North Carolina National Sports Media Association Sports Writer of the Year, Ed Hardin, was with us yesterday, and he had something interesting to say about the Greensboro ACC tournament. It's the first time the tournament's returning in 5 years. This is some of what Ed had to say, what he found interesting about this year's tournament.
The difference is you have – 9 ADs in the league now who have never stepped foot in Greensboro Coliseum. They're going to be looking at Greensboro as a test to see if it survives. Is the new ACC tournament too big for Greensboro? We don't think so, certainly not in Greensboro. And the ACC claims it'll always be in the rotation. But I'm not so sure that we'll recognize the rotation when it finally comes out. This is the biggest ACC tournament Greensboro has ever hosted. It's the most important.
How big do you believe this tournament is to the city of Greensboro?
Oh, I think it's huge to the city. I know it is. I mean, I was born in Greensboro. I'm still connected to some of the folks in the area who are with the Greensboro Sports Council and the Sports Foundation. And Matt Brown, the people at the Coliseum, do a phenomenal job. And it's a great facility. It's the largest. Remember this, Josh. It's the largest facility in the rotation. Okay, I mean, the ones that are on the books, Brooklyn, Washington, Charlotte, and Greensboro, it's the largest facility. That's important to remember. Might be the sexiest street address, okay, but it's the largest facility. And the other thing is, it has history. I don't disagree with Ed that 9 ADs are going to step foot in the building since the event was last there who weren't there, and I think there is something to be said about that. But the hospitality factor in Greensboro is second to none, okay? You know the tournament is in Greensboro before you ever break the city limit, okay? And that's important to the ACC. The Greensboro also provides one of the more unique aspects about the tournament that I think count. People can park at the venue, you know? I mean, that's
– head in the Stamies. Get some barbecue before you walk in.
Yeah, I mean, but look, I'm going to go through – look, one of the joys of my career in this business is doing the ACC tournament at the Greensboro Coliseum and walking through the parking lot with some of my friends at Georgia Tech, and they run upon a tailgate of Clemson fans or run upon a tailgate of Wake Forest fans or whatever in the parking lot of the Greensboro Coliseum, and they end up having a blast. And that happens in Greensboro. Greensboro has a spot for the ACC tournament, and I think the ACC tournament has a spot for Greensboro. The test of Greensboro is this. The tournament has gone now to a quicker rotation. Because remember, this is the first time that they've gone to Greensboro, and it's been won and then back out of town, right?
Yeah, and it's the longest, by the way, gap we've seen. Or, excuse me, the only gap between Greensboro ACC tournaments we've seen since it left Raleigh in the 60s was the 7-year gap from 88 to 95. There was another 5-year gap, but John Swofford was with us last week and said this is probably going to be the norm.
Yeah, because the event now has picked up momentum in other markets. I mean, trust me, I know of the ACC tournament 1989 in Atlanta. Duke Carolina play in the Omni. It's 3/4 full, and the late Commissioner Gene Cargan turned to several people in the media and said, if we can't sell out the Omni with Duke and Carolina, we're not coming back to Atlanta. Well, he was right. They didn't come back to the Omni. The next time the tournament came back to Atlanta, they had 41,000 people at the Georgia Dome. Okay? I mean, I happened to be in Washington in 1987. When State beat Carolina in the championship game at Capitol Center in Landover, Maryland. And I remember leaving the building that day thinking it wouldn't come back to Washington. And I was right. It didn't come back to Landover. It went to Washington. I mean, in 05, we went to the, at the time, I think, called Verizon Center.
Yep.
And it was good. Was it great? No, it was different. And I got to tell you, when it went back a couple of years ago, I wasn't at the event. I was at the SEC in Nashville that year for IMG. And to be honest with you, Washington won the event again with that performance. Greensboro will win the event again in my mind, because I know what Greensboro does and I know how valuable the event is to the community, and it means something to the community. And yes, it's the home of the ACC, but Washington, Brooklyn, Charlotte have all done very nice jobs to make the event attractive. It's different, yes, but it is attractive in those markets. And if you've got five really good markets, you ought to take your event there. And I think that's important to the conference. It's important to the future of the league as much as Greensboro is important to the history of the league. I don't think it's going to leave Greensboro. I don't think this is the last event in Greensboro. I think it is an event, though, that needs to be shared through the footprint of the league. And Ed's right. This will be 27 times the tournament's been in Greensboro, Josh. But here's the thing. This is a new ACC. This is a different ACC. You got to share the number one event the league has with more of the footprint. It's important to be in Brooklyn, important for Charlotte, important for D.C. as well.
Wes Durham from the ACC Network. I'll let you out with this. Two simple questions. If you had to recreate the Trey Jones shot at the end of regulation in order to escape a gym, do you die in that room?
No, I could hit the front of the rim with the ball on a bullet. The problem is I would probably tear, sprain, or injure something getting to the ball to pick it up.
Our assistant producer, his name's Aaron, he said he could do this in 15 minutes. So we went to the Chris Paul Academy this morning, and he did it in 10 minutes and 15 seconds. So I lost a bet, and I have to do something that's my worst fear and my worst shame.
What's that?
I hate Christmas decorations on cars in December, let alone February.
Oh, you look good, though. Your car's going to look good.
Antlers, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer nose on the front for the next 2 weeks.
You know what they say, Graham? Don't write checks your body can't cash.
Wes, it's so good to hear from you. We'll see you in Greensboro in a few weeks. Thanks for doing
this. Look forward to it. Anytime, Josh.
Yep, that's Wes Durham. Follow him on Twitter, at Wes Durham, and watch Packer and Durham in the mornings on the ACC Network. A lot of fascinating stories heading into Greensboro. The first ACC tournament in 5 years, most notable. But then North Carolina having a historically bad season, which is set to be Roy Williams' first losing year he's had as a coach altogether since he was Dean Smith's assistant in 1978. So you know the Tar Heel fans, they're going to come out. But can North Carolina make a run? Well, that remains to be seen. You are listening to WSGS Winston-Salem, WCOG Greensboro, WPCM Burlington, WMFR High Point. Those signals making up, you guessed it, Sports Hub Triad.
He was never voted most likely to succeed.
You're such a loser.
But then again, were you?
The very concept is unimaginable.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
It is time. That time you look forward to. Every year it's the Josh Grammy Awards. So many beautiful ACC basketball teams this year. So many beautiful players. Who's the best? Who's the team that you think deserves to be wearing the crown? I don't know quite what we're going for here. Is it the Grammy Awards, the Oscars, or a beauty pageant? Who knows? It's the Josh Grammy Awards. And in 15 minutes, we're going to be giving away three pairs of Wake Forest basketball tickets as the Deacs face the team that just upset fifth-ranked Louisville last night, the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. On top of that, you'll be getting a four-pack of tickets with each pair to go see the ACC Hockey League Championships this weekend. First category, ACC Player of the Year. A lot of people say it should be Jordan Wora. As we look at the contestants, the nominees for this award, Jordan Wora's right there, and he's had a very fine season for the Louisville Cardinals. Oh, but there are a pair of Blue Devils among those finalists. Vernon Carey and Trey Jones having great years as well. My winner for the ACC Player of the Year is Vernon Carey. Top five in scoring. Top five in rebounds. When it comes down to it, I think he means a little bit more to the Blue Devils than Wara means to the Cardinals. Louisville has Sutton there in the post and Enoch and Malik Williams who could score in the paint and pop out for a three. Deep backcourt too. This Duke team's young and they've had to grow up fast. And Carey has been a go-to, just reliable player in the post all throughout the year. So he's my ACC Player of the Year. How about we jump to ACC Rookie of the Year? Obviously, you probably think it's Vernon Carey because it is Vernon Carey. But I want to give some love to a couple other freshmen because it is a loaded category. This might be the most loaded category of any. Landers Nolly, top three in the league in scoring out of Virginia Tech. On top of that, you got David Johnson, who's had a lot of standout performances this year, such as the game he played in Cameron, putting up 19 points before getting injured. Patrick Williams at Florida State's had quite a year. Joe Girard III at Syracuse, a really good freshman player, but it's got to be Carey in that spot. ACC Coach of the Year, your nominees. Mike Young, picked 14th out of 15 teams in the conference right now, 5-8. Still an outside chance for a tournament run in Greensboro. Also, Chris Mack, he's going to be involved in that conversation. Louisville, still the front runner to win the Atlantic Coast Conference. And I'm just going to go ahead and throw Mike Krzyzewski's name in there because it's his birthday. And the winner of ACC Coach of the Year, oh my gosh, the winner is Mike Krzyzewski. Crazy enough, Coach K hasn't won ACC Coach of the Year since the year 2000. Ever since he started recruiting the one and done, you've had naysayers say, oh, you should definitely win with this team. You should just wax everybody. This year's Duke team has been old school. Coach K, he said that multiple times this year. There have been points. They've faced real adversity. They've been consistent all throughout the way. So Coach K, he gets my nod, the Josh Grammy for ACC Coach of the Year.
No.
Coach, you have to accept the award. They like you. They really like you.
ACC
Defensive Player of the Year. The nominees. You got Trey Jones there. Stephen Enoch from Louisville and Trent Forrest from Florida State. It is going to be Trent Forrest winning my ACC Defensive Player of the Year. He was an honorable mention a year ago in this category. He leads the conference in steals. He was the best player on the floor in Cameron on Monday night. 18 points, 9 rebounds, 8 steals, and a tremendous player. And in the last category, my most improved player in the ACC, it's Buddy Boeheim. I've made jokes about Buddy Boeheim. I've said, if Syracuse's third best player is named Buddy Boeheim, it's probably not going to be a good year for the Orange. But putting the nepotism stuff aside, he's gone from 16 minutes a game last year to about 36 minutes a game this year. He's playing a ton of minutes, and he's scoring 16 points a game on average. He's been efficient in spots. He might not be the best player on this Syracuse team, but most improved, I think he belongs there. So those are the Josh Grammy Awards 2020. Vernon Carey, Landers Nolly, Coach K, Trent Forrest, and Buddy Boeheim, the big winners of the night. Your chance to win Wake Forest basketball tickets in 10 minutes. Another big story. The Houston Astros apologized, sort of. I just want somebody to come out here publicly and take full ownership of this. This morning, that didn't happen. You know, Jose Altuve speaking for a few minutes. You had, they brought out Alex Bregman. They were a little choked up for a couple moments, but they spoke for about 90 seconds, and that was it. Jim Crane's talking two sides out of his mouth. He's contradicting himself. They're denying that anything that happened affected the actual result, which if that's the case, why are you apologizing in the first place? Your thoughts are welcome on that and more at Sports Hub Triad on Twitter, 336-777-1600. Let's go to Wayne in Greensboro, who wants it on that subject. Wayne's an Astros fan. Wayne, how'd you feel about the press conference this morning?
Well, the initial press conference was a joke. But what was important was that afterwards, the players went to the locker room. The media with their mics and their cameras were all allowed in, and they had an hour to talk and ask any question they want. MLB Network had cameras and reporters in there, and it was a much better environment for getting responses. Some of the players weren't as articulate as others to make sure I get my point in, and I admit I'm a little prejudiced because I'm an Astro fan. But Carlos Correa said, "We broke the rules, period. We regret it. We apologize for it. There's no excuse for it." And then a reporter asked if they used any electronic buzzer on players in 219. And Correa answered, "That's a lie. No one used any devices on their bodies. No, no, no. You know I don't lie. It would be against my integrity. Again, 100%. Guarantee you no devices on anybody's body."
Well, hopefully that bears out. Thank you for the call, Wayne. Because in the name of integrity, I think Alex Cora, he embodied that with the Boston Red Sox. He just got outed. Like, when you talk about integrity, if we had this conversation 3 or 4 months ago, managers with integrity, give me the list. You probably go Alex Cora, Dave Roberts, as one of the top two you're going to list. And Cora, he was a part of this as well. So I really don't know what to believe anymore. You can be forceful all you want. Ryan Braun, he was forceful in denying what he did until he got busted. So I would like to take them at their word, but unfortunately, they don't deserve the benefit of the doubt anymore with this. Robert, the headline that I want your reaction to, something you're mad about. IOC officials, this is the International Olympic Committee, in Tokyo, they have reiterated the Olympics are still on despite fears of the coronavirus, which has been the big rage the last couple of weeks internationally in the health world. What's your issue with the coronavirus?
It's not so much with the virus as it is the same thing that happens every couple of years. Like, going as far back as SARS, what year was that? Like 2003. Every couple of years, we boost up this thing and make it much bigger than it really is.
Swine flu?
Swine flu, the avian flu, Ebola, MRSA.
Oh, yeah, whatever happened to Ebola?
That's my point. It pumps up, and why they do this is because after this goes on, and I've got the facts to back this up, when one of these come through...
Oh, I love conspiracy theory.
It boosts the stock market in medical sectors and other sectors that go to healthcare. So here's the numbers for you. When SARS came around in 2003, in a 12 months after that, there was, in those certain sectors, like health sector, public sector, all that kind of stuff, there was a 20% positive change in the stock market. Same thing with avian flu, 18%, swine flu, 35%, Ebola, 10%, and Zika, which was the 2000...
The Zika virus.
Yes, exactly. A 17.5% change. So these flus, which are real, I'm not denying that it's real. I think it's a strain of flu, but they boost the media coverage and all the coverage around the world for this, and all it does is benefit those companies. And I think in a month we won't be talking about this.
I hope you're right.
Me too.
336-777-1600 is the phone number. If you want to win tickets to go see Wake Forest, Georgia Tech next week, don't forget, they're going to be honoring the 1995 Wake Forest championship team that was a one seed in the NCAA tournament. Dave Odom going to be on back in the Joel Coliseum. It should be a neat sight. It's the 30th year of the Joel, so they're doing a lot of commemorative stuff this year. If you want to win tickets to that game, we have three pairs of tickets. 336-777-1600 is the phone number. And with every pair of tickets, you'll be getting a four-pack, a family four-pack to the Winston-Salem Annex this weekend to see the ACC Hockey League Championships over the weekend. That's where we're going to be broadcasting tomorrow as well. Again, the number, 777-1600. We're making you a winner next on The Drive.
He may not be beautiful, and we do sit around all day and talk sports. And yes, Britt McHenry, we feel great about it.
Do you feel good about your job?
This is The Drive with Josh Graham.
Our next guest covers a lot of ground. It's C.L. Brown, who covers the ACC's Big Four around here. Every time I go to a game, I'm sure to find C.L., who you can find on Twitter at C.L. Brown Hoops. And on top of that, his website, clbrownhoops.com. You covered Louisville for a long time before covering all the teams here in the Triangle and the Triad, the ACC Big Four. So I'm interested in your perspective on what we've seen so far in the conference. Who has things most figured out among the ACC's elite teams, Florida State, Duke, or Louisville?
That's a good question. I still, despite their loss last night at Georgia Tech, I still think maybe Louisville does. I just think they have so much. They have the depth. They have experience. You know, they have a standout go-to star kind of player in Jordan Wara. The point guard position was kind of the question mark coming into the season, and I think freshman David Johnson is going to be a star. Whether that necessarily happens this year in the tournament, maybe not, but he's shown enough, especially when they won at Duke, that he's a next-level talent.
And he showed that last night too, CL. He was great down the stretch. And then the last possession, they're down by two. It's Fresh Kimball losing the basketball. And I'm just thinking to myself, they have everything figured out here. It's obvious Johnson, he's the most talented player they have in that spot, and he's the one that makes them great. How has Louisville not figured out a way to build things around this guy?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure that Chris Mack wants to do it that way, to be honest. And honestly, I'm not sure if he did just go ahead and throw David Johnson in the starting lineup. Although post-game, I understand when he was on with Bob Valvano last night, he mentioned something about possible changes to the starting lineup. So I don't know if he was speaking specifically to point guard or something else. But I think some of it has to do with knowing the personnel on your team and having to manage, you know, manage egos, manage personalities. And if, say, moving, because I felt Darius Perry, when he was originally starting, I kind of felt like he might be a guy who, if you took him out of the starting lineup and made him come off the bench, that would rattle him. Now, it hadn't seemed to be the case since Fresh Kimball moved into that starting spot. But I don't know. To answer, to go back to your real question, I don't know if Coach Mack, I don't know if that's going to be his M.O., just to kind of go ahead and give David Johnson the keys and run with it. I don't think he could go wrong that way, but I just don't think he's going
to
do it.
We've known Chris Mack to be a culture-changing coach, dating back to his days as an assistant in Winston-Salem under Skip Prosser. He's the one that infamously created Tie-Dye Nation and came up with that concept that, of course, picked up steam all those years in the 2000s. Stylistically and culturally, how has Louisville looked different under Coach Mack versus Rick Pitino, you think?
Oh, wow. I think they're a bit more blue-collar, not to say that under Pitino that they weren't hard workers. I mean, they still were kind of, it wasn't like all flash and shiny object under Pitino, but I just think they have a different level of they just grind differently. You know, I feel like there's a little bit more of an attitude, kind of just like, we're going to do this work kind of attitude with them. That wasn't necessarily always present with Coach Pitino's teams. And I think some of that had to do with Pitino kind of came with a certain amount of splash. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, when they went on the road, it was all five-star accommodations. Like, they didn't stay at a Holiday Inn Express. You know what I mean? Like, they when they traveled, it was all first-class kind of stuff. And I don't think that Louisville doesn't – they're not doing the same kind of things under Coach Matt.
C.L. Brown with us here. Follow him on Twitter at C.L. Brown Hoops. Read his stuff, clbrownhoops.com. Watch some of his work there as well. So we know you got Louisville, Florida State, and Duke. We're going to be NCAA tournament teams from the league. Virginia, they're likely going to get in as well. I'd be surprised if they're not in. How many teams – today, NCAA tournament teams, do you feel comfortable saying the ACC is going to get?
Well, comfortable as of right now, I only feel comfortable saying three. I do agree with you that Virginia is trending in the right way, and I think Virginia will get a fourth slot. And then I think it's possible for a fifth slot to be solidified. And NC State, I think, went a long way and, you know, trying to secure that with the win at Syracuse. That was kind of a separation game kind of win for them to go on the road and get that. But obviously they got to keep it rolling. I'm not a big fan of Syracuse, to be honest. Like, I don't think they didn't really have any great non-conference wins. And their wins in conference, they haven't. Maybe winning at Virginia was probably one game that they won that they quote unquote weren't supposed to win, but that's it. Like, they really don't have, to me, any marquee great win for you to be like, oh, you got to watch out for this team. So I think State can get that fifth slot.
I'll close on this, CL, because you're talking about NC State. Last year, I think we were having a discussion, and we thought that this last year's team was a year away. And, of course, Jalen Lecque, we thought was going to be a part of this NC State team. That was a big loss. Baby Westbrook, a top 30 player for Kevin Keats. And there are some other things that have happened in the offseason that have set things back. Injuries have played a role as well. What do you point to as being the primary reason NC State, in some fans' minds, have been underwhelming this season?
Well, I think some of it just has to do with he doesn't have the depth that he normally has, and they haven't played the style that Keats really wants to play. Like, they haven't been pressing for, you know, entire games because he's got 10 guys and he's rotating them in and keeping everybody fresh. They've kind of had, whether it was, you know, early seasons, DJ Funderburk being suspended or injuries that have happened. Jericho Helms comes to mind when he got hurt against Wake Forest. Like, there's just been things that have kept them from having, they haven't had the depth that they've had, or have the depth that Kevin Keats wants. And so they're not totally playing the style that he wants to play right now. So I think that more than anything else, even more than kind of the inconsistencies of a Markell Johnson. You know, I think that more than anything else is why they haven't. They're not in a position. Like, I feel like right now we should be saying NC State is in, but they haven't played that way. So, I think they still can, though. I think they still will get the wins they need to be an at-large team.
CL, thanks for the insight. It's good to hear from you.
All right. Thanks for having me, Josh.
You got it. That's CL Brown. He's on Twitter at CL Brown Hoops. And you can read his stuff, clbrownhoops.com.